Well, now to talk a little, where efforts to proactively respond to climate change are the subject of a new documentary. The three coral atolls making up Tokelau are barely 5 metres above sea level and are extremely vulnerable to cyclones, sea level rise, low-lying inundation adversely affecting food and water sources. The documentary, called Waka, has been made by Massey University media production students. It shows the Tokelauan community weaving together customary wisdom and modern science to deal with sea level rise, with plastic pollution, with energy supply. The film's showing at Exposure, which is Massey's end-of-year graduation exhibition. So congratulations to our graduates, I guess, who are here in the studio with me now. Kelly Moneymaker, good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
Good morning also to Mason Rudd.
Good morning.
Hi, Mason. Two of the team who spent 2 weeks filming in Tokelau early this year. They are in the Wellington studio with me. So to each of you, tell me a little bit about your stories and how you came to be doing this particular project. Kelly.
I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. And I'm part Samoan, and my father is Inuit. So Indigenous representation is really important to me. And at the end of last year, they asked us what we wanted to do this year at Massey University, and I had asked for Indigenous storytelling. Then MFAT came in and told us about Tokelau, and we pitched an idea to them, and they really liked it. And so we were set off on our journey.
Kelly.
Mason,
sorry.
I'm just a Gisborne boy. Came to Massey. I wanted to make films. I watched films all my life, and I thought now's the time to tell a story that I think I could tell well. And I think I really did that here with Waka.
So what was involved in making contacts there, getting permissions, and ultimately going?
Well, it was the pre-production was very intense. We had to deal with the... We had to reach out to the Tokelauan community, and... It was difficult because they're on atoll, and it's very difficult to reach people. So, but we did have some help from Massey, and we had a great production team. So we have Rebecca Curtis, who is our producer, and we have Jessica George, who is our co-producer and line producer. And so they did a bunch of reaching out and getting those contacts for us. And Jess and I did a massive amount of research before we ever left New Zealand. 187-page research dossier.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was it that you... What was the story that you came to tell, and was it the story that you expected you would come to tell?
I think it is the story that we wanted to tell. It's about their resilience, because every day the Tokelauan people wake up and they're just slightly above sea level. So they look out to the ocean and they prepare themselves for the day ahead. And they don't have the luxury of sitting around and popping chocolates. They're constantly solving problems. Every day there's a problem, and every day the community gets together and they sort it out. We were walking down the street, right, Mason, and we heard a town crier coming through. They had something come up. Town crier came through and announced that there was a town meeting. Everyone dropped what they were doing and ran to the meeting house, and they sat there and listened to everyone in the community and problem solved. So we coined them solutionists, because they're all every day they wake up and they solve a problem. And they're not directly in the path of cyclones, but what happens is a cyclone will hit, say, Samoa, and then the tsunami that comes off the back of that, or the storm surge that comes off the back of that, inundates Tokelau. And since they're just slightly above sea level, it destroys everything in its path. And so they're building up the seawalls. And, you know, unfortunately, the seawalls start eroding from underneath, and this is something that they're constantly battling with.
Looking over this are the changes that are happening and that are coming, which is a worsening of those weather patterns that you've just described. Did you find a consciousness, a tangible consciousness about a growing threat? Because you're actually describing a people who in many ways have long dealt, practically and communally dealt, with the challenges of their geography. Did you come across a sense of presence, I guess, of what is forecast to happen in the future? What did people say?
Yeah, I think the biggest presence is it's not, you know, climate change is a gloomy topic, but I think the presence that they showed is the resilience and the positive attitude that, yes, things are changing, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to be upset about all the time. They really show that there's just things to do, and they change their lifestyle in a way that's actually just positive and uplifting, and actually it just feels nice and human, and you know, they're a community of love. So they yeah. really just showed that they really tackled the problem that way. Yeah.
Give me some more details about how they've done that, how they do that.
Well, they've installed, in 2012, they were the first to aim for 100% renewable solar energy. And so they put up a huge array, and now they've just recently installed a wind turbine. So it's hybrid. It's a hybrid system. So that during the day they're using the solar, and at night the wind turbine, it's a small one, and it's a test turbine. And they're already finding out that it's working far better than they thought, because at night they get these breezes that come through. And so they're able to pull completely, you know, so far they've found that they've reduced their diesel down to next to nothing. I can't talk yet because I haven't had coffee. Yeah, but it's a very, like Mason said, it's a very inspiring community.
Who's the they? Like, on these big projects, what's the sort of the way the leadership works? You mentioned everybody comes together, but how do the sort of leadership and cooperation work?
Well, what's really lovely is that the elders have, you know, they have the elders council. So they have the Topolenga, which is the men's elders council. And then they have the Hatu Paipai, which is the female elders council. And so they have their weekly meetings, and then they also have emergency sessions that they hold. But there's a couple Hatu Paipai members who attend the Topolenga Council, and they'll bring all the problems up to the table, and they have people who come in. And while we were there, one of the general stores had an issue, and so they came up and, you know, took it to the Topolenga, and they tried to problem solve what was happening there. And then they'll call a village meeting on the tail of that and discuss it, or the Topolenga will send out the omanga, which is the men's workforce. And that's, they call it the able-bodied. And so they go out and do all the work. Those are the ones who are building the seawalls. And they go out fishing, and they'll collect the fish for the community. And they divvy it up on an equal share basis for how many people are in each household. And they share their food. They share the fish. They share the coconuts. It's all about equal distribution.
This is where we've also seen some customary experience and wisdom come in, because they've adapted their fishing practices, I think, or they fish at night?
Well, they have traditionally fished the night flying fish at nighttime.
Right.
And then they have their daytime community fishing expeditions as well. But what they're finding now is that the seasonal fish aren't coming through, because the seasons are changing. The weather patterns are changing, and that's causing the fish to come through at different times or not come through at all. And now there's a new fish that's just recently appeared that they've never seen before. So they have all this long-term data.
More than us, by the sounds of it, from our first interview.
And what was interesting is when we spoke to the scientists, they were really grateful for this long-term data. They had something to establish their theories, and they say they don't normally have access to that long-term data.
I'm interested also in the premise that we discussed earlier, which is that the traditional wisdom and beliefs and cultural practices are also adapting modern techniques or changes or what we're learning. In fact, is it the case that some children have been educating elders on things like the health of the reef or other changes that are happening?
I think that's very exciting. The kids do their research, and they collect all the data, and then they take their findings to the Topolenga, and together they come up with a solution. And so recently the kids took some data to the Topolenga, and they realized that the reef wasn't healthy. And because the fishermen have all this long-term data, they know where the reef is thriving, and the kids show them where the reef wasn't thriving, and together they decided that they would do coral planting. And the kids can't put anything into action because the Topolenga has all of their long-term data and also the resources to help the children. So that would be like us walking directly to Jacinda Ardern and saying, hey, we have this idea. What do you think? So it's really nice that they have that close-knit community and they can problem solve across the generations.
The role of the scientific evidence too, is this a culture of traditional beliefs and religious beliefs? And did you see evidence that that was being respected, but also science was being acknowledged, and what scientific evidence was showing was being acknowledged?
Well, the scientific evidence is at the moment is collect more data, because there's not a lot of data collection happening in the Pacific. So if people are wanting to look at responding, you really only get, you really want to make it a one big solid response to make sure that, you know, with what's happened with the seawalls, they're building them up, but they're actually being destroyed underneath. So the next response you really want to do is making sure that, you know, it's not going to destroy
itself. What's working and what's not working.
That's right. Mm. So things with, like, the solar panels and the wind turbine is really good at collecting that type of data. There's also the automated weather system that gives us a better understanding, or gives the Tokelau Islands and the scientific community a better understanding of what is the weather data like over there, because it's such a... The Pacific is huge.
Mm. It's also changing.
Yeah.
So they have the long-term cultural data, but they also need to know what those changes are. And so what's happening is they have the long-term data for the from the cultural side, but it's being assisted by the new data that's being collected, because together they're able to use that to speak to the rest of the world.
I guess what I was alluding to, and I was just reading some of your background on it, was that there's a faith and a belief in their God, but also they, but they're also accepting, as you say, we've got to do things to
it's true.
Practically deal with them.
Their
with
faith is very strong. Mm. It permeates every fiber of their cultural tapestry, and I find that to be a really beautiful thing. But one problem that happens sometimes is that the scientific information might be in conflict with their beliefs. But one thing about the Tokelauans is they are very strong with their faith, but they have accepted the scientific data because they realize that it's going to help them respond to climate change. Mm. And so, once again, they're the leaders in the Pacific in that that way as well. You know, so they're the first to go solar. Now they're the first to have the hybrid system, and there are now solar systems all over the Pacific. And now we're hoping that they'll inspire others to use the hybrid system. And they also are people who hold on to their faith very tightly, but they're allowing this this modern technology into their lives.
The other practical responses that you saw, I think raised gardens and just getting away from salty water, and what else did you see by means of practical responses, Mason?
I mean, the boat's a big one. So the way that they're getting to each atoll, because the atoll is separated by the Pacific, so they've got a new boat, which means that they can actually go from each atoll a lot quicker. It only takes a couple of hours now rather than, was it like a day?
A couple of days.
Yeah. Just to see your family on each atoll. So they're really, just that slight change in being able to how they can, and just in transport, has really affected how they can help each other and help everyone who's who does need help, or just even just saying hi to your loved ones.
Waste management was another thing as well, and of course, being in the Pacific, I suppose they're collecting everything that we've chucked out, and it's making its way round. What's been some of the responses to waste management?
That's a problem they're addressing now. It's a big one for them, and they're really collecting as much data as they possibly can and trying to figure out the best way to expose of waste that's not even their own waste. These are bottles that wash ashore from other island communities, other nations. And so they are trying to reduce how they consume. They were talking about doing bulk buying, so there's less bottles, plastic bottles to deal with. And they are also trying to see how if they can create an MOU so that for recycling. So those are things that they're, we don't know a lot about that because it's something they're focusing on trying to solve now. And but one thing that we really appreciated was the coral restoration that they're doing through MyCorps. They're going out there and they're re-nourishing the reefs, because if the reefs don't re-nourish, if the coral dies, they're a coral atoll, and therefore it disintegrates even faster from underneath. So that's a job that has to constantly be in motion.
They're currently crowdfunding to raise money for what? For translators and
We did.
Marketing.
We had
this
a boosted.
Is you. This is
yes.
You. Yeah.
We did have a grant through MFAT to get us there and back and to take care of us while we were on the atoll. And MyCorps also helped with our transportation between atolls. And they've And then we did a boosted campaign, which we had a lot of different contributors. MyCorps was one of them. And we had a lot of friends and family and people who just believed in the project. A lot of Tokelauans here in the Wellington diaspora contributed, which, and we're extremely grateful because that helped us pay for our translators. And that was a mighty task.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We would not have been able to make this film without our translators.
Yeah.
And it took five. So we had two main translators and three assistants. And we had to have two of them come into the edit suite to make sure that we were
getting it
cutting
right.
In the right, yeah. In the proper spots and putting our translations underneath the subtitles in the right places.
What else was the challenge? Is it your biggest project to date, the peer review? What else was the challenge in capturing the sounds and scenes?
I mean, it's a beautiful place. But on the last day, I woke up with blisters all up and down my arm, and I panicked. And I had to run up to Rosa, our fixer, and is everything okay?
Yeah, no, it is. Sorry, I'm just gesturing to someone. You keep talking.
No, yeah. That's okay. Anyway, I had these blisters up and down my arm, and I had to go to Rosa, our fixer, and she was amazing. And I was like, Rosa, what's wrong with me? Why do I have these blisters on my arm? She's like, don't worry about it. You're okay. You just stay a... You got peed on by a flying acid-peeing cockroach. And I was like, I got peed on. And she's like, don't worry about it. It's okay. It's okay. But there's a lot of challenges being on Tokelau. It's a beautiful place. And it was just exciting. And you just experience all these just new life and new people. It was a wonderful, rich community. Yeah.
Culturally rich, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So your hopes now for... well, what happens now? This gets shown at the graduation, which is very exciting. But what are your hopes beyond this? Has this really whetted the appetite for...
Well, I was going to fly to Santiago, Chile to represent the film at the COP25 in Santiago.
Okay.
But due to the civil unrest that's occurring now, they have moved the COP25 to Spain. And it's still kind of up in the air, so I don't know if I'm going or not going. I'm hoping to go and represent the film.
But as a filmmaker, are you hoping beyond this there'll be?
Yes, we're hoping to submit to film festivals globally and get it out there and try to get as many people as possible to see. And hopefully they'll be inspired by the resilience of the Tokelauan community, because it's a very special place. And you feel so so enveloped by the community that when I came back to New Zealand, I went through the blues for a couple of weeks, because you really do feel cradled by their love and their camaraderie. And like I said, they are solutionists. Every day they wake up and they solve a problem and they take it in stride because their faith is strong, because they have each other. They really work together and walk through this. You know, we named the film Vaka because it's about everything about their community. It's about their fishing and their sustenance and the people in their community who are on board with them, paddling toward the future. And I felt part of that community. And so when I came back, I had the blues a little bit.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in, Kelly Moneymaker and Mason Rudd. More details about the film that they've made on our website. There's a couple of links there to show you.